Well, welcome back to the Security Savings Bank Food Forum Part 2 in partnership with FS on AM 1330 WRAM Monmouth, AM 1590 WAIK Galesburg, 1560 WBYS Canton, and AM 860 KWPC in Muscatine, Iowa. Today's coverage is brought to you by Security Savings Bank, FS, Monsanto Agronomy Center, Illinois Soybean Association, Illinois Corn Growers Association, the City of Monmouth, Warren Henderson Farm Bureau, Illinois Farm Families, and High Noon Barbecue. Let's turn to Katrina Howard, our certified dietitian with Hy-Vee. We appreciate you being here today. What do you think of all of this?
But I have seen that. I used to work in Naperville at a Whole Foods, so I'm very, very well aware of the fear of GMOs, the fear of non-organic products, and that sort of thing. So it's very interesting to hear things from another perspective.
What kind of questions get asked of you as you walk through the store? You do a lot of shopping tours with people.
Yes, I do. So a lot of questions I get asked are, you know, is this product good for me? I've heard, you know, I heard Dr. Oz say, or I've heard on social media that I have, you know, high cholesterol, so I can't eat shrimp because it's high in cholesterol. Well, you know, there's so much new nutrition research out there showing that cholesterol in foods doesn't impact our blood cholesterol. So it's not going to affect heart disease, and shrimp is a very healthy product for you. So just a lot of confusion on what they can and can't eat. And yesterday I had someone with cardiovascular problems. She was worried about the fruit and sugar. And that shocked me because, you know, now people are worried about fructose in fruit. So they're scared to eat fruit. And that's, you know, that's the exact opposite of what you should do. You should eat more fruits and vegetables. But they hear fructose, they think that it's bad for you. So they stay away from fruit. So there's so much misinformation that I'm trying to battle as well, you know, at the consumer.
Did you notice Katrina's used the words fear and scared in what you were just saying?
Yeah.
So that's what you're dealing with. I mean, a lot of this is fear, isn't it?
Right. Well, they get to their doctors and they, you know, their blood sugar's high, or they have high cholesterol, or they had a heart attack, and now their doctors finally said, okay, now it's time, you have to start eating better, or you're going to get diabetes, or you're going to have another heart attack. So naturally, they are more afraid. Because, you know, they don't want diabetes or they don't want to have a heart attack.
That's a whole nother forum right there. When you get into those concepts,
right,
for sure. So what do you tell them? How do you help them? And what did you learn at school? How did your schooling help you get ready for these type of questions?
Well, you know, in school, we learn the facts. We are evidence-based. So I'm not going to give anyone information that I can't give you dozens of studies that back that information up. So, you know, we basically learn the science, and then, you know, at the store level, that's kind of when I've learned more about what consumers want, and then the questions they have. So
I wonder, and I know this is being done by our ag groups, but we probably ought to focus more on the influencers, because it's like Rob, a mechanic. I've had a mechanic tell me, oh, your truck's not running right because it has you've been using ethanol. Boy, did I unload on him. You know, I gave him the whole bucket load. But if a doctor's recommending one over another, or if somebody's gotten to the doctor and said, don't recommend or try to discourage him from using any certain time, that goes a long, long way. And we're seeing some of the activist groups, what do? They want to get to the teachers. So the teachers then teach a certain way or push a certain agenda in the classroom. Getting to the influencer is probably more key than maybe even directly to the consumers, because those consumers are listening to those influencers.
Right.
People in your position, we better make sure you're on the right side, by the way, or we'll let you out of this room. No, but people like you, in a day's time, it's hard telling how many people you influence, and then it spreads from there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I get asked dozens of questions every day, and, you know, right now the big influencers are, you know, social media. It's Dr. Oz, it's Food Babe, and I wish dietitians were more the influencer, but unfortunately, right now, we're just not. People think we have outdated misinformation and, you know, are just food police, so I wish we were the influencers.
That's what scares me. Maybe I was naive growing up. I don't doubt that I was. But now it seems like we have a generation that will believe some people with such lack of credentials to be an expert on what they're talking about. But yet it's, I mean, it's taken almost as gospel. They believe what they're being told.
Yeah, they have, you know, when it, I think there was a list that came out of all of the nutrition influencers in our society. And of the top 50 to 100, there was only one dietitian, and that was the dietitian for the Today Show. The rest are bloggers, you know, Dr. Oz, people with no nutrition credentials, like Mark Bittman and I can't think of Michael Pollan. Guess what? Those are journalists. They have no nutrition background. They didn't go to school for 5 years like we did, learning nutrition, and, you know, go through an internship and be in hospitals and do research papers. You know, they're journalists, and
it's
you don't know.
And you don't know about journalists, do you, DeLoss? I mean, that it's that Holiday Inn commercial. It's coming over and over. Well, you know, I'm not an expert, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn, you know, so now I'm an expert because I got a good night's rest, you know, and that we do that.
Exactly. And people think, oh, I lost weight, so now I'm going to tell everybody how I lost weight, and I'm going to start this blog, and I'm going to be a nutrition influence for my community, as many people as I can reach. And nutrition is the only it's the only thing that people do that for. You don't fly a plane and say, okay, I flew in a plane. I think I got this. I think I can pilot this plane. But if you lost weight, or if you, you know, cured your diabetes through food, then all of a sudden you're an expert and you can give other people nutrition advice.
And the irony there is, I guess I grew up at a time when if I had a question about my food, I'd ask the person growing the food. But now we have a society that they have a question about their food. They listen to somebody that's probably never even been on a farm.
Exactly.
Well, and the reason that happens, if I could interrupt for a second, is we Google. It's the fastest, quickest, right there, time span, attention span, like Rob said. And the folks don't have, they don't know. They don't know a farmer to go down the road and talk to Ron. So they just Google, and there's ways to pay for social media or any type of blog to be number one in the search engine optimization, and boom, they're there. You know, right. It's like you and I, when we do our Dallas Cowboy research,
that's
Bleacher
right.
Report comes right up, right?
That's, you know,
it's
right.
It's something that is designed through the internet to have happen. So in essence, technology created some of this challenge, and maybe inadvertently, but inherently it's also there. And I'm going to come back and talk more about the marketing and labeling. I want to draw in Tom Prince, who's also with us, a professor at Monmouth College. We're lucky to have a college that takes ownership and looks into this information and wants to talk about that and be a part of our program. Tom, thanks for being here. What are your thoughts about the conversation so far?
It's a fascinating discussion. And really, I'd like to point out a couple things, because I believe Stan was right when he gave his opening comments about the body of truth. Because as we try to uncover this, we realize a couple things. We don't live in a rural society any longer. The majority of our population lives in urban America, not rural America. So most people, we are a generation, or in some cases two or three generations, removed from somebody having the farm memory or farm experience that we in this room may have enjoyed. So our target audience, if you will, is different. It has changed. And if you believe, as I do, that perception is reality, if you perceive something as good, it's good. If you perceive it as bad, it's bad. And the influencers really have a big say in this. And the influencers are not coming from rural America. They're not coming from the farm. Our connection to food is limited in large part to things like the Food Network, or who's got the hot recipe right now, or, oh, look at these fresh vegetables that I just went and picked. So if it came from other than that particular source, it's not good. And we have a tendency to believe that to such a degree because that's our frame of reference. Given that perceptions change over time, our lifestyles have changed over time, I think it's very important for this panel and for our purposes to really look at our language, to look at our vocabularies. We've already used it often today in this panel. We talk about biotechnology. That's a scary word. Which do you want? Do you want nature's choice or do you want biotechnology? It's not sellable. It is a very confusing word to the general public, and it has a tendency to scare them off. I think what we hope to do, I believe, and I think the mission of the college and the food triad that we've initiated and the efforts being made by many of you around this panel, and I do salute Katie very much. Her work is astounding in bringing the farm story to the public. But one of our big challenges, I think, is to tell people that it is not about picking sides. It's about making informed choices. And we have to give them an opportunity by the use of a vocabulary, explain our vocabulary. We've all talked to doctors and they use medical speak. And we talk to attorneys who use lawyer speak. Well, there's something about having food speak that people can relate to that I think is very important. And discussions like this, panel discussions, and I think the work at the college right now with the food triad, with the initiatives we're trying to do, is trying to inform students that there are choices, but make certain you understand the vocabulary and the choices that are being made. I think that's critically important because it's too easy to be influenced by certain commercials or movies or whatever that can paint one side or the other as evil. And I don't think that's the case. I think the case is understanding and making informed choices. And I think food speak needs to improve to where we really identify what it is we're talking about in terms that people respect and understand.
You know, we're talking about a fickle consumer base here. Tim and I were just talking about this in the break. For all the talk about worried about health, worried about nutrition, or worried about all these things that the consumer supposedly is, don't see that impacting their concern or their choices about bacon, right, Tim? I mean, if you put bacon on anything, it's good today, right? Do you hear anybody questioning that at all? I mean, it's good for your industry. It's right.
Yeah, it definitely is. And we've talked about that, you know, the bacon has become a social craze, you know, just not, like I said, using it on topping, but not just a burger. It's on, you know, wrap it in chocolate and put it in anything, you know, and we've talked about that. It flies in the face of what we talked about, the nutrition. And I don't know if that's the one thing people say, well, you know, if nothing else, I'll just have some bacon and I don't, you know, it tastes good and I don't have to worry about the nutritional aspect of it. So it is, it's interesting. It's, you know, it's kind of one way it's okay, another way it's not.
I always say the consumer isn't always right, but the consumer is always the consumer. They're always the customer. And so to a certain extent, as a producer, you have to deal with that fickleness and, you know, getting back to I'll ignore how many calories are in the product as long as I think it's safe on another part. It's what makes them feel good, that they're making some kind of – there's a moral justification going on, and we talked about this, Dan, too. We want what's best for our kids, our family. So if we can somehow reassure ourselves that we're doing everything we can do, then we'll make that purchase that way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And listening to you, Tom, things that words like earth-friendly, biodegradable, so on and so on, nature's choice, simply nature, those are the terms being used to market products today. Whether or not everything, you know, could be earth-friendly that's on that aisle at the grocery store, you know, you don't know. I want to think about the consumer that's coming, that's going to be out of school and start to have a family. Tell me about them, Tom. What kind of questions do they have? How are our students? Because you have students from Chicago to the suburbs, like you said, metropolitan areas. What are they concerned about? And how do you guys help them find those informed decisions?
The use of dialogue. We try very hard to talk, to have even non-classroom setting discussions where in the evening we will pick. We actually were so pleased to have Katie come speak to us one evening and students show up. They didn't get credit for it. It was a time for them to come and discuss what is a family farm, what's it like, trying to expose these students to a world they're not familiar with, which is a rural lifestyle, where your food comes from, defining terms. Whether it's good or bad, the reality is a lot of students get their information from Facebook or social media. A reliable news source is something that they count as, I had two friends tell me this. So it gets to be kind of scary sometimes where when you want to find actual proof, and, you know, fortunately we do teach how to research, how to look, but that doesn't happen to everything. So if you look at social norms, a lot of that is influenced by social media and what their particular filters are allowing them to receive, whether it be their connections on Facebook, social media, wherever. So we have to deal with it in a way that begs them and encourages them to look at facts and to really dig deeper. We tell students in class all the time, think deeper. If you want to truly be a leader, if you want to graduate and be one of the captains of industry or be one of the people who change the world, it is required of you to think deeper, to not take it at surface level. And I think that's a big thing that has to happen within this industry, within the agricultural industry, to encourage people think through, you know, it's not just menu planning. It's what makes this up. It is such an enormous job. I had the absolute privilege of knowing a man named George Jenkins, founder of Public Supermarkets. And one of his greatest talks I thought I ever heard him give, he said something very simple. He said, it is a huge responsibility to feed this world. And the people in this room contribute to that. But we have a society that's used to going to the grocery store of abundance, where a lot of the world doesn't have that opportunity. What would happen in our country today if we didn't have access to refrigeration like we do? It would change a lot of things. So we try to bring this up to students and ask them, think this through. Our supply chain is magnificent in this country. From production through harvest, through processing, manufacturing to delivery is second to none. And unfortunately, most people take it for granted and don't realize the work that goes into it. That realization, that eye-opening experience for our students, I think is critical to them if they're going to go out in the world and help change it.
Katie?
You know, to bring it back to the food consumer, the conversation back, because I think we're talking a lot about what we in agriculture feel like we're facing when we're trying to share that story. But, you know, the goal is to make that connection. And so as a mom, I want other moms to not feel guilty that their kids ate a pack of Goldfish one day for a school snack. Because my kids are currently living on Subway sandwiches because we are living at Ball Diamonds right now. And all that happens right around the dinner hour. And by the time they get home, they're so tired they're not going to eat anything anyway. So it's either a slice of pizza from Casey's or a sub sandwich. And I'm choosing the sub sandwich right now. Some people on social media would resort to shaming because how could you possibly let that happen? Well, I also am traveling quite a bit, and I haven't been to the grocery store in 2 weeks, so that's what we're living on right now. I want people to understand and to feel camaraderie in their peer group and that it's okay, we're not perfect. But if we follow what our nutritionist probably would tell us, what my grandma always preached to us, eat your fruits and vegetables, treat yourself once in a while, and go outside and play. And that takes care of the health issue that seems to drive so much of the underlying conversation that we feel like we're facing on the farm. The other piece of the conversation is this. I am a farmer, and I raise corn and soybeans, raw commodity. When it leaves my farm, it either goes for fuel, it goes for processing into a variety of byproducts that are used in food or consumer products, or it goes to a feed mill. The nutrition aspect of my corn and soybeans, I don't know that I can really speak all that well to it. And so that's why part of our conversation has to include nutritionists and dietitians. Part of this conversation has to include the food companies and the food manufacturers. And that's where I get a little sticky on, because if you have to slap a label on your product that demonizes another product sitting on a store shelf next to it, you don't deserve my dollars. Stand on your own merits of your food product. Now, I know that flies in the face of marketing. I mean, it's all about marketing.
But it just seems like, gosh, if we could all just be nice to each other. That's another thing my grandma always said. wouldn't this just be so much better?
As a marketing person, though, let me just say, not all marketing is bad.
No.
No, not all marketing is bad. Tim Myers and Katrina Howard, I want to pull you in. We have about 30 minutes left here. I want to talk about marketing and labeling a little bit here, as Katie pointed out. You did a really nice job last year, Tim, explaining chicken. And that we probably, that was one of our biggest responses, was it was all the same chicken, just packaged differently. And Katrina, feel free to jump in anytime as well.
Well, yeah, I think we were talking about hormones specifically, and this applies to pork as well, too. You know, it's not there are no additional hormones that are given to pigs for growth. And actually, there are no the truth is that farmers don't use any type of growth hormone in pork production. So that's not out there. So when you see but how many packages of pork will you see that says no hormones added? Okay, that's on the label. You think, okay, well, I'll purchase this because it doesn't have hormones in it. The package of pork sitting right next to it that doesn't say it doesn't have hormones doesn't have hormones either. But it's that absence of marketing. Well, if this says it doesn't have it, well, then the other product must have it in it. And you know, that labels have become so, like I said, it's a marketing claim, a marketing gimmick, and that is, you know, that confuses the consumer because, you know, it's hormones aren't allowed, but yet if they see a package that says, you know, it's not in it, well, that must be better. That will make me feel good. I want to purchase that for my family because I sure don't want to feed them hormones. Well, you're not feeding them hormones with the other package, but if I don't have that understanding, it confuses me, and then that creates this, then the attack, well, then everything else must be bad for me. And so, you know, that's just one example, and I think as we talk about labelings and the influx of natural and then, you know, what really stands behind that, and how can the company say, well, that it is, you know, whatever certified, and you know, there are some USDA programs that can do that, but a lot of times it's just a marketing claim, and I think consumers really need to ask, well, how am I sure that what's on this label is really can be verified and tracked, so labeling is a huge issue, and I know that's just one example.
Didn't we see that with Cheerios when they came out and said, hey, non-GMO Cheerios? Well, we don't have GMOs that I know of, so.
No, right. Changed in the recipe. And what they discovered was their sales did not change.
Right.
Because the thing is, as you pointed out earlier, Mike, folks who buy a certain way or a certain type of food, they're going to buy that certain type of food. And just because Cheerios changed a tablespoon of sugar in their recipe is not going to make a person buy Cheerios anymore. I'm still buying Cheerios, even though I'm not pleased with that decision, but that's what my kids want to eat, so that's what we buy.
Go ahead, Ron.
I'm not buying Cheerios. I used to eat Cheerios for breakfast. I don't buy Cheerios anymore. So mm-hmm. It did affect their sales.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Just not in the way they'd hoped for. Right.
And can I come back real quick, just before Katrina, Rob, that term hormones, another one that was sent to us in questionings. It's not necessarily a bad thing here.
Yeah. Same thought. So back to our terminology or our nomenclature. So help me, those of you more science-based than I, but hormones are a naturally occurring thing that are out there. Just like a chemical, everything has a chemical makeup, to my comment earlier. So again, it can be very, very misleading just based on common terms that the way we form a perspective based on that.
Because now we market based on what they don't have. It's everything. We're free of this. We're free. It's not, here's what we have. It's just here's what we don't have. That's now the marketing, what's hot in marketing for food.
Exactly. The biggest thing I've seen in marketing is using the buzzwords like GMO and gluten-free and saying products are like corn chips, gluten-free. And people think they're healthy because they're gluten-free. And I'm going crazy because when did corn ever have gluten in it? People just don't understand what gluten is. They think it's bad. So they're going to buy the gluten-free corn chips that say gluten-free when absolutely no corn chips on our shelves have gluten in them. Milk and antibiotics are a big thing now. Just organic is not going to have antibiotics, but the regular milk you buy on the shelf, they can't have antibiotics in it either, because if it was tested positive for antibiotics, the entire, you know, milk silo they had for the day or tank would have to be dumped, like thousands of gallons. So know your milk is not going to have antibiotics, and know your chicken is not going to have hormones in it. So it's the buzzwords that they're working on now, gluten-free, GMO, antibiotics. Those tend to be the big ones. I do my favorite store tour is actually on labeling, and I always end in the frozen aisle, and there's a packet of raspberries that are packed in lots of syrup and sugar. It's absolutely horrible for you. But the label says no cholesterol, no fat, and all natural. Well, raspberries don't have fat in them. They don't have cholesterol in them. And of course they're all natural. It's a raspberry. But I mean, I guess plastic is all natural too. So, I mean, that to me is just so ridiculous. You'll never see an apple or a raspberry or a banana with a long list of all of its health benefits. You just won't. But you'll see products in the middle aisles that have all these natural claims and all these other claims on it.
And the lady you were talking about at first didn't want to eat the fruit that was in the grocery store, but it's safer to go to the middle to get the food out of the box.
Right. So, you know, she said to me, you know, she ate cookies and she loved Angel Food Cake, but she was afraid of the fruit. So, because fructose and high fructose current corn syrup high fructose corn syrup is as big now, but it definitely 5 years ago was something that people were worried about.
You mentioned gluten-free. If we go back to the nomenclature aspect of it, celiac disease is an autoimmune disorder that gluten sensitivity is a part of that. So it has a place from a medical aspect.
Oh, yeah.
But what we've turned it into is a diet fad or a marketing claim that gluten-free is a good thing and gluten is a bad thing.
Right. So. And I mean, it sells products, you know, from, you know, the store's point of view. It definitely sells more products when you have the gluten-free claim. But again, yeah, we do need those products for people who absolutely cannot have gluten. But that's about 1% of the population.
And items like gluten-free shampoo is now available on the market. We have a true story of that wherever Lauren's at, gluten-free shampoo and lactose-free lettuce. Yeah, that was one actually over in Canton. The Farm Bureau, Elaine was telling us, the county manager over there, about lactose-free lettuce.
It's even into, you see the commercials for dog food. Doesn't have, there's one out there, no corn, no soybeans, no meat or whatever. I'm thinking, my dog wouldn't want this either, I don't think. But that's become, those are the same catchphrases now that sells dog food.
Yeah, you know what, I think a good way maybe for me to sell or me to get out more fruits and vegetables to people or put those claims on it. So if you come to Hy-Vee and you see gluten-free apples, you'll know why.
David Letterman, one of his first jokes was that caught people when he was on Carson, was that it was a dog food commercial that said that we don't have a speck of cereal. He said, my dog just drank out of the toilet yesterday. I think he's going to be okay with a speck of cereal.
Tom, is this what you were referring to in some ways about the food speak?
Absolutely it is. It speaks to what's the catchphrase, what's this, what's that. Now, it does help educate the consumer to some degree to say, okay, what is gluten? Maybe we have to go through the cycle where we say, what's gluten? And it gets to the point of ridiculous. You know, the human comedy has to play out, and then we get back to reality. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with that overall. What I have a problem with is when we want to inform a consumer that this is truly a good product. That maybe, you know, there it's a big job to feed this world, and the way we have increased yields is by technology, and it has done a lot for the world and food security, and it not be viewed in a bad light. So we need to find food speak where maybe we have to go through this cycle of gluten-free toothpaste until we get to a point where people start to understand what these terms really mean. I do think it's incumbent upon us to help educate people as to what these terms really mean. What are these words? What is the simple vocabulary that we see in the grocery store every day that people have questions about? Answering these simply, I think, is a big job, but overall helps the consumer. And I'll take an educated consumer over an uneducated consumer every day. They will make better choices. You will have better profit margins. You will have happier customers. So I would choose to have that educated consumer.
You know, part of our challenge is we want to see things immediately. So if we're out there saying without the use of this technology, we can't feed the world or what you do get is going to cost you more. We can't quantify it. We can't turn around and say, if we lose biotechnology, your cost of food is going to go up this amount. That product is going to be a dollar and a half more than it is right now. I mean, we can't put that exact term. That's what would make the argument for a lot of these people. Okay, if we don't have this, you pay more for this. That's what they're looking for, and we really can't put it in those kind of numbers. That's what we're kind of striving for here, struggling for, or to say if we don't have this technology, you're going to have less in that grocery store on that shelf than you have right now. You're not going to have all these choices. And until we could do that, we have a society now that won't believe us because they've never had to go without or never had less than they've got right now.
Yeah, as a farm broadcaster, you spend a lot of early mornings going to work, and sometimes on your first day of training, one of the first things they teach you is how to start the coffee, okay? And so people would, every job I would be, people would say, do you drink coffee? I'd say, no, and I always come in with milk. And at first, when I would do that, people would say, oh, that has too much fat. And I'd say, well, that's why I'm drinking a pint, or that's why I have a 12-ounce cup here, because, you know, I understand that. And then later, I would at a different job, I'd come in, people would say, oh, that has too many carbs. And it continues. And I'm just waiting for the time when I come into a place with milk and someone says, oh, that has too much calcium. That is too much protein. You know, it, in some ways, it just, you know, what's the next fad? And you know, in some ways, it almost seems like it's a cycle that we're just still trying to play chase against.
I think it's important, excuse me, for everybody to understand that those things that we're talking about have really been elevated to a point where there's going to be legislation. And this is where I get really concerned, and I think the consumer should be very concerned. Again, I'm really glad that that we have a nutritionist here. Katrina, this is extremely helpful, and I'm learning a lot. but I don't think I personally could go for much more on a label than is there now. And with all of the other types of claims that we've heard about, and we've got packages here that are showing the different kinds of claims. But there is legislation being introduced all the time, particularly relative to GMO-type products, but that say, you know, we need to have that on the label. I think this is a big concern because people don't know what the labels mean now anyway. And it just really adds to a lot of confusion. I think this is going to be a big issue, not just for agriculture. This is a big issue for the consumer.
And some of that legislation is already in place, which goes back to what you were talking about. So how do we show what happens if you take something away? And it's happening in California with the legislation about cage-free. And the proponents of going cage-free said, oh, no prices are going to rise. And now a dozen of eggs in California is, I don't know what the amount is, but is it $6, $7?
$6, yeah.
$6 mm-hmm. for a dozen eggs. Now we need to learn from that. Like, we need to learn from the fact that, okay, the unintended consequence of thinking that we're caring for our animals better than what the poultry farmer was already caring for their animal is, now you're paying X number of dollars. Now, if people want to pay that money, guess what? That option, going back to choices, is already on the shelf. It's already there. If you want to avoid genetically modified ingredients all day long, there are labels and products already on the shelf that are there. It's called the Certified USDA Organic Label. It's there already. And so if you want to put that money out, then that is your choice to put that money out there. I agree with you, Don.
Yeah, Katie brings up a really good point. It is the legislation that's going to require this that some states are really balking at. Vermont has decided to label its products, I think, starting in a year. New York did a study on it, and it's a really very famous William Lesser from Cornell did a study. What's it going to cost everybody in New York if we decide to label genetically modified food? And it's $500 a family. Because you get into special handling, you get into supermarkets have to change pretty much where they put things. It's a huge issue. And what they also said was the California problem, which is you'll see products go away because the implication that there is something wrong with a product is really what we're talking about here. And that's going to make other products go away, as it has in Europe, and that raises the cost of food.
So the Grocery Manufacturers Association is now pushing legislation to say, hey, label what's not GMO, because it's a lot less in the marketplace than what is GMO. Why label the 70% when it's safe? Label the 30% that's not. So we'll see where that goes. I think what else is interesting is not just labeling, but now these proposed dietary guidelines. That's a big one right now. And when that first came out, I thought, well, big deal. I don't read them anyway. I didn't know what was on the old food pyramid in the old days, let alone that. But then you start thinking, it impacts what goes into the schools. It impacts what goes into the military. And it impacts a lot of different things, right, Tim?
Yeah, definitely. And you know, I think that's a good example that food often gets very political, and you know, it can be used to promote agendas, and this, that's definitely one that, you know, those guidelines were not based on science or nutrition. It was just they tried to say that meat was not as sustainable as a plant-based diet, which is not true either. And so, you know, but those kind of implications do trickle down, and you know, would affect school lunch programs, would affect others that would look to that as a guidance for nutrition aspects. So, you know, there are a lot of things like that I think a lot of times we have to sort out and say, okay, what are the impacts when these things are done?
Dan Zink, it's been a little while since we've heard from you. What do you think of the discussion so far?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I think the thing that I take out of it, and I think my main point I'm getting out of this is this panel is passionate about agriculture. The food mom is passionate about food. Two passions coming together can either be a tremendous conflict or a tremendous marriage. And I think how we approach it, we can't let our passion drive us to a counterattack mechanism when we're being attacked. And that's the biggest thing in agriculture that we face, is we're the minority. So our tendency is whenever we feel that we're being pushed in a corner or we have to get defensive, we counterattack. And it's a dangerous place, because when it's something as dear to a person as food, we know we have to eat to live. That's, no one challenges that concept. You have to eat to live. We want to have as many choices as we possibly can, myself included. I'm a farmer. I want choices, though. I want choices in every aspect of my life. But I want to also feel like I'm not being attacked for those choices. And historically in agriculture, we get defensive, and we can't be defensive. We have to have a conversation. As Rob started this thing out, it needs to be a conversation where I listen to your concerns. I listen and understand where you're coming from, and I'm able to provide some insight to you as to why I feel the way I feel.
That's very good. I like the way you put that.
And
Mike?
Getting back to my point about consumer fickleness, I mean, I never thought I'd see a day where, in this case, a hamburger chain, their big promotion is pay $6 for our hamburger. And then they load it. I don't think there's anybody worried about the healthiness of that burger that they are promoting. Of course, those presenting it, there are other marketing effective tools that are being used there, obviously, with the people that are eating that hamburger at the time, that is pretty effective. But I mean, they're going just counter to everything we're talking about here. They're not worried about calories or GMOs or anything. They're saying, our product is so good, you ought to pay more for it.
You know? There's a market for it.
And there is a market for it. It's working for them.
So. And they have a marketing campaign centered around that as well, with a target demographic, which that's how it works. Right, Tom?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you know, the idea of an informed consumer is so critical, I think, because I gladly support, you know, the organic movement. It's a wonderful movement. If you choose to have a garden, if you want organic, it should be available. Choice is not a bad thing. But I don't like painting things as good and evil so readily when it comes to our food source. Right. And that's really a concern of mine. My colleagues who have the organic garden on campus and work at it do a wonderful job. And they do provide a great source of nutrition to our local community. I salute their efforts. At the same time, we can go into Hy-Vee or our local stores and select organic or non-organic depending on what we want. So, again, the ability to have an honest dialogue, not a confrontational dialogue, but an informative dialogue where you sit and you present your sides and respect each other's opinion, that is, you know, maybe that's fantasy land, But we do at the college try to provide that to say, learn enough to make an informed choice. If we accomplish that, we've done a lot with our students, I think.
We wrestle with the consumer in our leadership program. We have programs, projects where we try to engage the consumer and tell them about agriculture. And we found that it ends up being a little preachy, as we've discussed here. You know, we're telling them about agriculture when, in fact, we're not listening to them and really understanding the consumer. The consumer in Illinois looks nothing like this room. You know, we're a bunch of people from a rural area, and mostly white and lived here for generations. So we don't resemble the consumer at all. There are 12 million people in Illinois, and 8 million of them live in the northeast corner of this state. And we've got to go there and find out who the consumer is and what their challenges are. And we are just beginning that process. The Field Moms was great getting people out of the city and in. But, you know, you really have to go in the city. And you have to find out what a food desert is. You know, we talk about eating healthy and eating fresh vegetables, and they don't have them. And it's probably not good to take a bus to get there. And these are real problems that consumers in Illinois face. The majority of consumers are dealing with other issues that we have never confronted in this part of the state. And in our leadership program, it is difficult for us to get a handle on that, but we're committed to do that. So we go there, and we're going to find out who the consumer is and how to begin to talk with somebody as opposed to talk to somebody.
So do you have the Naperville resident who drives by 6 grocery stores to get to the one they want, and you have the Chicago person whose only food choice is based upon what their public transportation takes them to or near?
That's right. And so we need to talk to all of those people. We need to go and meet them and say, so what are you eating today? And, you know, we have a tendency to condemn people who will, you know, have a bag of Doritos or a or a soda pop that for food all day, that's what they could get at the safest store that they could get to. And we look at that and we go, oh, come on, you know, where's the nutrition? Where's the farthest thing from their mind is this really, you know, healthy for me? This is a tough conversation, and you know, if I think it's something we need to think about.
That's why some people say a lot of this discussion is an elitist-driven agenda. Drive them to the food of the highest price and follow the money. And if you look at what you're saying, that if I'm one of those people, I would agree with that.
And I think, Mike, that's really the key of what we're talking about here, that it's that vocal minority. Mm-hmm. We got a certain element of our society, fairly affluent, and I think there's some recent research that would say feeding the world is not really highest on their priority list. Mm-hmm. And affordable food, they don't really much care about. Mm-hmm. So if those are two of the premises that we've been preaching forever that we want to deal with, that's really not high on the folks that vote more than others.
Our messaging no longer resonates in a lot of scenarios. I think that's why we have to look at our messaging more.
There was a chart that I have seen that says, okay, here's 4%, the food elite. You know, these are the people who will go in and they'll pay more for organic. Not that that's bad. Again, it's a choice. They'll make that choice. Then there's the world of agriculture, our end, if you will, down here, maybe 1 to 2% of the population. So between us, we're 5 to 6% of the population. It's the 95 in the middle, the 95% of the population who every day has to make these decisions about what to buy at the grocery store that is the balance, you know, that we're trying to reach.
I remember talking to some of the Chicago moms and asking them where they shopped and why. You know, for them, sometimes food becomes a social status aspect too. One mom said, well, you know, I feel like I need to shop at Whole Foods, but to me, Whole Foods is whole paycheck. I put my whole paycheck when I go to Whole Foods. But, you know, it was just that she felt that pressure from other moms that's where I'm shopping and that's you perceive to be the best. So, and whether I can afford to or not, I feel like I need to go there. And so, you know, sometimes that becomes a status thing in society of what that can be done.
That's an excellent point. Ron?
So all this recent conversation has kind of jogged a question in my mind. So we're responding to this dialogue we're having today is responding to the anti-production agricultural critics, where there's 95% of the people that Don's talking about that don't really have an interest in that. So I guess my question is, why are we responding to the critics when 95% of the people only want good, healthy food at a reasonable cost?
Right, and that's a good point. Really, really, they do care. Those 95%, they want good food. It's just that there are these questions that have come up, and questions sometimes lead to, as I brought a couple of reports about legislation that's pending that would deprive people of certain foods over the long run. And I think that's really this, you know, these either ends of the spectrum are battling over making safe, abundant food possible. And that's really what the battle is.
And out of that 5% may come somebody sits on the county zoning board or becomes a nutritionist and then influences somebody else. I mean, that I think in agriculture, we fought this for a long time when the animal activist group started up. And the big debate among ag groups was, do we acknowledge them by standing up to them, or do we just ignore them and they'll go away? And a lot of our strategy was ignore them and they'll go away. They didn't go away. They got bigger. They got more powerful. They got more influential.
I had that problem at National FFA organization where we had this Facebook page that had probably it was definitely thousands. It could have been hundreds of thousands of people who liked it. And a lot of the conversation kept coming up of organic and non-GMO, and this is the way you should do things. And to the point where our social media director says, you know, we need to be talking about this message. I said, the only reason they're on that message is because it's a free forum that they can easily be on. And so this is the vehicle that they've chosen. It doesn't mean that they're more than the 2% that we talk about. They have just found a good and easy forum for them to use. And, you know, good for them for doing that, too, because there was nothing stopping them. And if I were in their position and I wanted to have a voice, that's probably where I'd go, too.
I think that, you know, to come back from my hat as a mom and everything, is that if we could just get out of our own way, what I think what the goal is of all the conversation about food is that we have a healthy society, that we're feeding the hungry, and that they are getting the proper nutrition that they need. And so if we could stop talking so much about a label or about a process or a procedure and focus on the fact that a person should not be scared of eating an apple, whether it has an organic or a non-organic label on it or it's got sugar in it, whatever percentage that is, you know, focus on the fact that you need to eat the apple. As farmers, you know, as you said, Ron, our main goal is to provide food, fuel, and fiber for folks. And this gets in the way of that sometimes and hinders our process of doing that. Again, if we could just all get along.
And speaking of food, it's time to feed you guys as well. This was panel one, part two of our food forum with Security Savings Bank. This was panel one. I want to thank everybody who was here. You're welcome to stay for panel number two. That's coming up. We have some other guests who will be joining us on the panel as well. Can I just take a real quick second? I know, Tom, you've got to get going. We appreciate you being here from the college, the Food Security Initiative Steering Committee. I think you've got a room full of resources that we can all learn back and forth, and to help these students have informed decisions and to feed the world. Looks like we've got a common goal here.
Absolutely, and it's been a pleasure to be here to represent the college and to thank all of you for your input, and I hope we can have time together on campus this coming year and talk to a lot of students. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Katrina, Don, they're going to be back with us. Tim Myers, also a farmer from Liberty, I do believe. Appreciate you being here from the Illinois Pork Producers. By the way, a quick plug for Da Pork Burger. How's that going in Chicago?
Very good, very good. You kind of talk about all the toppings added on it, but you know, we have had good success in Chicago with the pork burger and trying to kind of get a new product out to folks and allow that as an opportunity to have them talk to farmers when we do that. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, what we've been trying to do. And, again, appreciate being involved with the panel, a great discussion, and I would just encourage all of us to continue to have those dialogues, honest, open, transparent dialogues, and look for that to continue.
ilpork.com. Thank you. Dan Zink, we really appreciate you coming in. You're welcome to come back anytime. General Manager, Stone Seed Group, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Vanessa. I appreciate you hosting us, and I'll have to say this afternoon I'm not going to be here because I'm going to a fifth grade awards banquet. So I'm going to do my number one job, that's being a dad.
Okay, thanks so much. Mike's coming back with us. Katie, we appreciate you being here today. Have a great summer.
Thank you so much. I won't be here also. I'm headed to a baseball game to get back to. But to leave your listeners with a few resources, because the only question that's the dumb question is the one that's not asked. So we've talked about telling our story. Join the conversation and talk to a farmer. And there's a couple places to do that at. WatchUsGrow.org is the website for Illinois Farm Families. On a national level, FoodDialogues.com is for the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. And recently, on Facebook, a large group of farmers have come together to form Ask the Farmers. And we are a very diverse group from all over the world, actually. The website is askthefarmers.com. They're on Facebook, on Pinterest and Instagram and Twitter as well, Ask the Farmers. Ask a question, and someone will ask or answer.
Okay. Jared, you're back with us as well as Rob Elliott. Ron Moore, you're welcome to stay for the second panel. I know your wife's going to be joining us as well from Illinois Farm Families, but you probably got a tractor calling your name too.
Well, no, actually, I'm going to have to go help my son. He's doing a little landscaping this afternoon, so I am his help today. So
well,
I'm
good.
I'm going to be helping him.
We appreciate you being here, Ron, as always, and keep up the good work with Illinois Farm Families.
Thank you, Vanessa. This is another one of the things that you've done is really put agriculture in the forefront in our community, and we appreciate that.
Thank you. I want to recognize also Katie is here with us. Katie Lansoff, she's with the Knox County Farm Bureau, made her way over today, wanted to hear this discussion as well. DeLoss, you're welcome to stay. I know you're expecting lunch. I promised you a nice lunch for coming over.
Well, that just being here is incentive enough. The lunch is it high noon? Is that
high noon barbecue? High noon,
yeah. But I am actually headed to Brownstown, which is just east of Vandalia. The Illinois Wheat Tour is going on, so we're going to see how
great
what people are saying about that, and four-letter words like rust and scab and things. Hopefully that won't be part of the conversation.
Well, we appreciate you being here. You can hear DeLoss Yonke every day on RFD down in Bloomington at the Illinois Farm Bureau. Stan, shall we take a break? Come back with panel number two. Okay, thanks very much. We'll be back in an hour with panel two on Food Forum Part 2. Thank you for listening.